Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution.
Greetings, I'm Tom Gilson. Today on ID the Future, we hear from John Mark Reynolds, who's a fellow with Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture, and he's the president of the St. Constantine School in Houston and a senior fellow of humanities at the King's College in New York City. More to the point today, though, he was also a very longtime friend of the late Philip E. Johnson, to whom he pays great tribute here as the closing speaker at a November 2019 symposium in honor of Philip Johnson.
So what if you applied the grand says who to education, and you allowed that kind of thinking to percolate for several decades? The answer is that if you go to a Polish university and look around, you would find someone trained out of that question. Because it was Phil's mandate that there was no success without successors, and that those successors couldn't come out of something named after him or built around him personally. And so, whether it's at Baylor University, where the philosophy department contains professors trained Johnsonianly, whether it's in Poland, whether it's in Yale's program inside of Singapore, or whether you go to Boehm at the Houston Grand and listen to the lead female singer, who I will not disgrace by calling a prima donna, she never was. You would meet people in the arts, in government, in politics, who were taught to ask the right questions because Phil inspired a generation to do so. And I sat in a college class on Jane Austen, because Phil would have loved to sit in a college class on Jane Austen on Tuesday. And I turned to my right and I thought, this student who's visiting to look at our college program looks familiar. And it was a student daughter trained in the first class that came to visit Phil at UC Berkeley to learn to ask the grand says who. If there is no success without successors, and if in Christian humility one can never stamp or mold those successors to be exactly like you are, then Philip Johnson is a success because he has numerous successors in so many fields of endeavor, because one of his great focuses inside the intelligent design movement was training up and raising up generationally the next generation. And he would be thrilled to hear about the work of intelligent design, because he never stopped thinking about what is true. And so we never stop thinking about and supporting what is called the intelligent design movement. I think he began to suspect that he would not personally see the broader cultural move in the direction he favored, though I always reminded him that the Berlin Wall fell quickly and unexpectedly. He did have hope because he thought truth would prevail. As a philosopher myself, who first met him at the end of a dissertation on Plato, the soul, and science, Philip was a refreshing intellect. He did not prescribe any particular theory, any singular solutions, though he supported sensible ideas that needed his support. There's a diversity of opinions on this platform about different issues. He was not content to ask what he could believe, some desperate defensive move, or what might be jury-rigged together to save some other precious Phil Johnson idea. Phil always wanted to know what was true. As I see it, Phil framed questions about whether any naturalistic mechanism or fully materialist theory could account for everything. Could one get ideas, numbers? Why does math work? Consciousness, mind from matter, or starting only with matter and energy in mindless motion? Philip E. Johnson looked at the proposed solutions, especially the overarching stories of so-called science, and was not satisfied. As a product of the best schools, Phil had been told there was a solution, or at least several likely possibilities of how to get all of those things from materialism. He saw what a lawyer is trained to see, a weak case too often built on intellectual bluster, bluff, and bullying. Good luck bullying Philip E. Johnson intellectually. I'd be sweating and shaking too if I tried that. As a theist and a Christian, Phil was not interested in squeezing theism or Christianity into that system. He doubted it was true. Once we were discussing recent work of attempting to do such a thing, and it wasn't that he was opposed to the attempt, it was to ask whether the attempt needed to be made. Were either of the polar opinions true? That was the question. Could you save something? Phil thought you could jury-rig almost anything. The proponents of the naturalistic solutions kept saying, particularly when it related to biology and psychology, that we knew generally how things worked, or at least probably worked. We were just filling in the gaps. But is it true? Phil would ask his critics, and most often this question was ignored. He was happy to apply the same question to ideas he hoped would work out, like the different notions floated by the growing number of scientists, philosophers, and thinkers associated even loosely with the intelligent design movement. He was self-critical. This is why he thought the design movement could and must remain a big tent. If one is not persuaded by the answers given by the majority in any movement, then one need not settle on one alternative set of answers. Instead, Phil, to the very end, sought the liberty for ideas to be pursued, especially in education. That was the heart of his intellectual program. In his last call to me, Philip E. Johnson was pressing educational reforms and alternatives. He knew, as he had always known, that though the truth is out there, along with goodness and beauty, truth had to be found and incarnated in new generations of scholars, activists, and educators. He was often most interested in knowing who the people were who were carrying things forward in the end. Why education? As a theist, Philip Johnson was also a realist. In the sense, he wanted ideas applied to the world as the world is, not as the world is fantasized to be. As a man of ideas, interested in how these ideas interact with matter and energy, he supported an open philosophy of science to find some better answers. Phil knew that the quest for truth needed more minds. After all, if we begin in mind, the great mind, a plurality of minds would help us move closer to the truth. Nothing made him happier than seeing new people come to the Discovery Institute, or a Tory honors chum go on to finish graduate level work as recently as this year happened at Oxford University and pursue ideas. To the end, he was pressing for those of us pursuing what we called the Constantine strategy. Theistic realism applied to all of education in a kindergarten through college program to multiply as quickly as possible the number of people who would ask impertinent questions to the dominant philosophical paradigm of our age. He was not bothered that all of those students did not come to the same conclusions, even his tentative conclusions. Instead, he was gratified to have helped set them free from the tyranny of a closed philosophy of science into theistic realism. Truth should be pursued. As a result, he would often say, with a puckish smile, "If we win, we shall," meaning his friends, I assume all of us, "have to switch sides as our side grows too powerful and so stale and tyrannical." I think he imagined Michael Behe running Harvard, dueling it out with you, Steve, at Yale. And then he'd switch sides altogether and persecute both of you endlessly. Thank God none of us have to live to face that horrible confrontation. He did not live then to see design or any of his educational offspring with the problems of Constantinian success. Merely the one great insight that that emperor had: stop defending Rome to defend Rome, build a new Rome. Stop defending the old paradigms and squeezing what you believe into them, build new paradigms. Be open, be critical, and above all, pursue the truth. He was hopeful as a result to that last day. On the Thursday before he died, he was brimming with ideas, confident as only a Socrates can be at the edge of the unknown. The truth will prevail. He was fond of his intellectual children, proud where he thought they had surpassed him, with the confidence of a theist that God will protect the right. He even asked where I thought things were, and was gratified to hear of a growing generation pursuing theistic realism, his greatest passion. We must bear his going hence, knowing the time was ripe. We honor him best by courageously examining his ideas, applying those that work, discarding those that become dated. He was first and foremost intelligently designed and an intelligent designer, a mind awake that has now come to full awareness. Thank God for Philip E. Johnson.
That was John Mark Reynolds speaking at a November 2019 symposium held in Berkeley, California, in honor of the late Philip E. Johnson. For more great information on intelligent design, its intellectual history, and its evidences, please stay tuned to ID the Future at idthefuture.com or on your favorite podcast app. For ID the Future, I'm Tom Gilson. Thank you for listening.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute. For more information, visit intelligentdesign.org and idthefuture.com.